Welcome. We say at the beginning of Sesshin in the guidelines that Sesshin is an opportunity to discover anew, clarify and actualize our deepest intention. That's a sweet description of Sesshin that I imagine we all experience in one way or another, something like that. And I think we could also substitute for the word deepest intention, we could say deepest trust. Sesshin is a time to discover anew that which we trust most deeply, a time to clarify this deepest trust and to actualize this deepest trust. What is it we trust most deeply? I would propose that in order to just be alive as a human, we have to trust something. And we might not trust anything completely, but what do we trust most deeply? And I think this issue of realization, or Dogen likes this word, verification or confirmation. Verification seems to me like 100% trust. When we can trust in the Buddha Dharma, we'd say like our true nature, our true self. 100%, then that's like verifying this reality of our true nature. We might not always be in touch with our deepest trust, but in Zazen, can we even for a moment trust our true nature, like 100%. I think often Zazen, we're like, you know, we might be hanging around in the like the 90th percentile range. Sometimes in Zazen we might be hanging around like the 10% range too, right? Which is the nice thing about Sesshin, why it's this special opportunity, because what do we have, like 12 periods a day? There's some of us who are sitting the whole thing times 7 days is what? 72. We have 72 40-minute periods to 72 opportunities to discover anew, clarify, and actualize, manifest, realize our deepest trust. So because we have 72, it's fine if we use like 5 or 6 with like 2% trust. I mean, like, get me out of here. That's fine. If we keep going, then we get another opportunity. And it's a mutual meeting of me, this limited sentient being, meeting Sesshin, this inconceivable opportunity. We give ourselves to it, it gives itself to us. So this... what is this to trust 100%? I think trust comes in these different realms. It's, we could say there's a head trust that's like where we can conceptually verify the teachings. And this gets sort of downplayed in Zen, but I think it's important that like our understanding, at least for me, it's important that if I'm going to trust in the realm of Buddha Dharma, if I'm going to trust my true nature 100%, I also would like it to accord with the sutras and the commentaries and the Zen ancestors' teachings. If it's just something that's like really wacky reality that somehow seems to be happening, has nothing to do with all with the Buddhas and the ancestors, then you could say it's not our conceptual head trust is not lined up with the teachings. Some might not find that so important. I also think it's important to have that conceptual trust also because it gives us a framework and so that it's it makes it replicatable. I think sometimes people have like some spontaneous experience where they feel like this is it, no doubt, but then well, tell me about it. Well, it's just like it's really cool, I'm really happy and it's great. Well, yes, say more. Well, nothing more can be said. It's a feeling. So then may be it, right? But then the next period is Zazen. What was that? It felt really nice. Where can I get that feeling back? My body's not quite comfortable. As the feeling's gone. But if it's just a feeling, then it's not replicatable, except that we happen to land on this feeling again. Feeling you're kind of giving, you don't exactly create them. So, but if we understand what the feeling of ease is based on, even conceptually in this case, then we have a pathway. And so the Buddhas and ancestors have left us all these pathways back. But that's just one somewhat superficial trust, this head trust, conceptual trust. As Keizan says, listening and thinking are like being outside the gate. So we can also have like heart trust, maybe on an emotional level, we deeply feel this trust that this is it, or in our true nature. And that's a different, and maybe we do say that is kind of deeper than a head trust. Hopefully they're related. Different versions, different aspects of the same trust. And then we might also have like a gut trust that's like in the Dantian, or we have a belly trust. It's like a kind of knowing in the hara. So we can trust with our head, we can trust with our heart, we can trust with our gut, and then we can have just an overall trust that's like we can't say that it's we can't even necessarily say that it's like a trust that's happening in this body and mind, in our head, heart, or gut. It's like an overall inconceivable trust, but a kind of like knowing or trust, verification. Yes?
And it feels like it's coming through us, and that we're just the
Who's the us that it's coming through?
The trust is coming, and that feeling of oneness,
yes,
that feeling of connection.
But who's the us?
It's coming through us.
What do you mean, us?
This body,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that's, you could say this overall trust,
yeah,
comes through this body and mind,
yeah,
as a kind of head trust, heart trust, and gut trust. That's kind of us. And then there's, it could be a trust that's beyond us too. So, and then if, what do we trust completely, right? It seems like, when I explore this, which naturally starts happening in Sesshin, we're looking for what can we trust, what can we rely on, what will never let us down. If it's going to be 100% trust, not just 99%, then it must be something that will never let us down. So therefore, already, we've eliminated many things, anything that comes and goes, anything that's conditioned, anything that, any experience. It seems to me that for me to trust anything 100%, it must be eternal. Means like it never ever changes, and it must be all pervading. Meaning like there's no place it does not reach. Does that make sense? So, what is it that is ever present? Beginninglessly, endlessly, that is not born and doesn't die, that pervades all of space as well as time. That those can sound like lofty words, but in fact, I think anything that we trust 100%, at least seems to me, has to fit that criteria. So what is that? That's what we call our true nature, our true self. And therefore, if it's ever-present and all-pervading, then of course it must be here right now. It's not some abstract, all-pervading, eternal somewhere over there. Or that happened to us in the last period of Zazen. You know. If it's not here now, also, it's maybe that's really the bottom line. That's really not trustworthy if it's not here now. And then, if we can discover this, what we trust most deeply, clarify what we trust most deeply, and actualize it, like just be that trust, be this trusting, then we've resolved the issue for the time being. And then we can also ask, if Dharma gates are boundless, meaning the entrances to this trust are boundless, which ones work the best for us, this body and mind? This is where now there can be lots of diversity. Even if there's many beings across the universe who trust reality, the all-pervading, eternal, 100%, they might access this trust. They might discover this trust, clarify this trust, and actualize this trust through different Dharma gates. So, that's beautiful, I think, that and it, of course it makes sense because Dharma gates are boundless. We could even go so far as to say anything, any activity could be a Dharma gate. A few days ago I was talking about dancing and singing. Kazan was a little bit criticizing and saying, I think these can be Dharma gates, but for some people they're maybe the main gate. For us, I think, if we can clarify and actualize this, what we trust 100%, then I think it's good to, in this lifetime, in this particular body, I look for, our Dharma gates, the ones that really, maybe even our main Dharma gate, where we feel like, this is where I just notice the patterns, this is where I enter most easily. And so those of us in the room today, I imagine that wherever we are in the trust scale, that one of the main gates that we trust more than other gates, at least right now, is Zazen. Because here we are, right, in a sesshin. We at least have enough trust to, be in the room. This is one of our Dharma gates. And then maybe we have other Dharma gates that are we also access it. I have lots of Dharma gates that I enjoy and play in. But I said, for me, so far, or for the time being in this life, seems like for me, Zazen seems like the main gate. That's why I like to do it a lot. And that's what Dogen says too, when in the Bendowa, when somebody's questions him and says, I can't remember exactly what the question is, but something like, this reality is all pervading everywhere and there's so many practices just within Buddha Dharma. Why do you just always talk about Zazen, Dogen? And he says, because it's the main gate. He might say, for me, Dogen. That's why I always talk about it. I, Dogen. So that's what I think as Zen practitioners, we might be like, this might be one of our gates, but, we can see. And if it's like one of our main gates, then we find ourselves doing it more and more. If at some point we really feel like this is the main gate for me in this life, it's not like a better or worse kind of thing. It's just for me, it seems that this is the main gate. Then let's trust the main gate. Trust the gate that opens us to the potential of 100% trust in our true nature. And then what about Sesshin? I might feel like, I do trust Zazen, but Sesshin, I feel like it's actually maybe too much Zazen. Sometimes I have actually felt that way. I feel like as a Dharma gate, depending on the schedule exactly too, I mean, some sesshins can be over the top. too much of a push and a strain. No breaks, no sleep, and this kind of thing, then it may be that there's a certain range for certain people that it's like, actually, it'd be more helpful if I sat a little bit less. I think it's possible. So, of course, the usual way we do it here is like we say, please follow the schedule completely. But partly what we do is we say, but you can come to any number of days. So that actually is maybe our main flexibility. Is you find the Dharma gate that works for you. And you can say, or my main Dharma gate would be 7 days, but I can't because of other Dharma gates. So then, see if we can treat whatever else we're doing as Dharma gate also. Anyway, this trust thing, I thought, was coming up for me as I was rejoicing in contemplating how 100% trust seems to me a synonym of verification or confirmation. Can you follow that? And so a little piece of from Dogen's Gakudo Yojin Shu. We're studying Keizan's Zazen Yojin Ki. So this is Dogen's guidelines or points to watch in practicing the way. He says, practitioners of the way must first of all have trust in the way. He says, first of all. So we might say, actually first maybe, maybe this is true in that in order to practice at all, we need at least 1% trust to like get our butt to a cushion, right? Or to get us to try it out or Google Zen Center or something, right? It doesn't come from nothing. I think there's some seeds of trust. So practitioners of the way must first of all have enough trust in the way to Google Zen Center. And then, you know, to keep practicing, the trust deepens. Those who have trust in the Buddha way must trust. Now he's describing what Dogen means by what this trust could be, and I would say this is the trust that could be 100%. I think one could have 100%. I don't think one could have 100% trust that Dogen is always right, for example, because that's kind of, he's a conditioned person and stuff. He might just say some haphazard stuff, or trust that Kokyo is right. I don't recommend that. Oh, 84. 84. Oh. And we're on about 67 or so, probably.
Maybe I probably do 72 periods.
Well, and usually some people take some periods off for servers breaks and things like that, so maybe 72 is about the number. But those who have trust in the Buddha way must trust, and I would put in parentheses, can have 100% trust potentially, that they are within the way from the beginning. Beginning, like before their parents were born. That they are free from delusive attachments, upside down ways of seeing things, excesses or deficiencies and mistakes. That there is a freedom from all of that stuff. That's even wildest stuff. We might have some delusive attachments at any given moment. We might have some upside down ways of seeing things and some excesses, deficiencies, and mistakes. But practitioners of the Buddha way must trust that they are free from all that stuff. And I understand it to be like at the time that it's happening, not like in this moment when none of it's happening. But if it's 100%, it has to be even in the midst of the mistake. That they are within the way. arousing this kind of trust, clarifying the way, and practicing comprise the foundation of learning the way. This building our foundation is arousing this trust and arousing. I think it's this hotsu that means like the hotsu ganmon is like give rise to. So it's not exactly that we create it. I think that's one thing about this, an important point, I think, about this kind of trust, is that we can't fake it. We can do things, we can fake or contrive doing things to get us closer and closer, like sitting in a nice posture and breathing in the hara, right? Those are kind of like doing something, but the trust itself, we can, okay, I trust it. Let's see. Do I trust it completely? Yeah, I trust it completely. No. We can't tell ourselves. We can't force this. That's why I think it's like this verification. It's like, it's given to us. We can approach it through our own investigation. But the 100% trust comes from reality. Right? We can't create it. We can't fake it, right? So maybe giving rise to or letting this kind of trust arise, clarifying the way and practicing comprise the foundation of learning the way. We do this by sitting and cutting the root of discriminating mind, turning away from the path of conceptual understanding. This is the skillful way to start practice as beginners. We might say we're approaching this, but this is the entry, we might say. Next, in a way it sounds good enough to me, but after cutting the root of discriminating mind, turning away from the path of conceptual understanding, mere conceptual understanding. Next, drop off body and mind and toss away both delusion and enlightenment. Sounds almost the same to me, but it's like, now drop even the fact that we're resting in 100% trust, or where whatever percentage trust we're resting in, instead of like, yeah, this is it, 100%, no doubt. Now toss that away, and drop off body and mind, toss away delusion and enlightenment, and carry on.
So it sounds to me like the dance is going on all the time, even the first time that you Google Santa Cruz.
What would you say is the dance?
It's simultaneously arising. It's like not one, not two. This is...
I think another way we could also talk about the dance is we call Kano Doko, the mystical communion between Buddhas and sentient beings is a dance. So you could say, I just have this sense that like my life is kind of chaotic, and I've heard about the Zen thing, like Zen breakfast cereal and Zen perfume and stuff. And whenever I'm eating Zen breakfast cereal, I feel calm. So maybe there's a way to practice so I don't have to rely on just the cereal. So then we Google. And you could say, but the actual, that intention to Google, you could say is Buddha. It's like, maybe I Google. It's like me, the sentient being. And then I like get up off the couch and go to the keyboard to Google, and like Buddha's pulling me. So that's Like that's like a dance, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And then the dance from the beginning, like you say, it's a dance, and all the way through, and then this 100% confirmation at some point is, we could say, given by Buddha. That confirmation comes from Buddha, but it doesn't just like drop on us randomly while we're just kind of sitting there. I think it takes some inquiry too from the sentient being side. It's like, that's what I've been trying to speak of, is like asking, you know, what do I trust most deeply? You can ask in Zazen, you know, what do I actually trust most deeply? Like, well, not much. Well, I trust something. And like, you know, we've then a little lightness comes when we see what we do trust. And then like, well, what, actually, if you're like, I want to rely on something in this life. And then, and what is it? What can I rely on? And maybe the more we start investigating, the more we see everything I thought that I was relying on is actually not very reliable. And trustworthy, like Dogen's words and Kokyo's words and certain postures of sitting and adversarials and things like that. So, and therefore I think that might be something like a dark night of the soul. Wow, there's nothing to rely on here. But I feel like if I don't rely on something strongly, I can't even go on. Some people might get to this point. I must find something to rely on, and they're going to keep looking deeper and deeper. I find it's not reliable 100%. I'm in the 90s, but not, no. That was Shakyamuni Buddha's thing, right? He like learned these practices of these incredibly refined states of consciousness, like the realm of infinite space is one of the jhanas. The realm of infinite consciousness is the name of another jhana. Buddha learned those from other teachers. Already knew about this stuff in India. And the Buddha's like, cool. This is, and the teachers were like, you got it, 100%. And the Buddha's like, actually, I think it's 97%. So I'll see you guys. Yes.
Maybe the 3% gap is surrendering to beyond engaging thoughts or beyond kind of accepting the idea for that kind of knowing that isn't in conceptual framework.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah, it has to.
It's an interesting coming and going as the cook. I've seen a lot of people who are coming here this week for the regular sittings, and it's so touching to see how many people do find something that attracts them here.
Yes. The dance is going on, and that beings are dancing with Buddha, whether they think of it that way or not. It must be so. If people want to come to Zazen, even different types of Zazen and different results of Zazen, it's all still part of that big dance, I think. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a perfect segue into this next section of Kazon. What Liz says is like, well, this last percentages, the gap between whatever 90-something percent and 100% must be beyond concepts and ideas. I think this is right. And so now Kazon's Because he's writing, he's speaking in words. So it comes packaged like this, but he's really getting, this next section is about beyond concepts.
So what we're talking about, how you explain it, that would be like the equivalent of Bhajra pride, this recognition.
Yeah. And for the Zen assembly, we won't get into details about that, but yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting, like that is sort of pervasive throughout religions or spirituality. Predestination sort of came up for me. It's not the equivalent, but it's hinting at it, or somehow taking some of the ingredients of it.
Yeah.
And spinning it off in another kind of conclusion.
And it seems like all spirituality and all religions seem to always talk about the eternal and the inconceivable, yeah. Actually. I mean, usually that's how I hear God spoken of.
But, I mean, predestination, like you're chosen. You know, this is your path that you're chosen. Has some of those elements in it, like that you have a relationship with the eternal, manifesting in a certain way.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, you can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same. But
yeah.
Has those elements.
You can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but you can appreciate it. Yeah. You can appreciate being dragged into trust by all the Buddhas. So Keizan says in the guidelines for Zazen, I think these are some beautiful sections as we get near the end of this essay. Zazen is not based on this three-part model that I guess is a kind of traditional way of talking called teaching, practice, and realization or verification. It's not based on teaching, practice, or realization. Instead, these three aspects are all contained within Zazen. Teaching, practice, and realization. So usually, the common understanding, Keizan says, is that measuring realization or verification is based upon some notion of enlightenment, or satori. Keizan says, this is not the heart and mind of Zazen. How about that? Practice, as commonly understood, is based upon strenuous application, making effort in meditation. This is also not the essence of Zazen, not the heart and mind of Zazen. Teaching, like Dharma teaching, is based commonly on refraining from harm and doing all good. This is also not the heart and mind of Zazen. That's the usual way some people think of teaching, practice, and realization. And I haven't heard this list. Dogen talks about practice and realization, but this three-part list, but it does crop up occasionally in Zen texts. So another way to look at this three-part thing is sometimes it's spoken of like there's the view, the meditation, and the conduct, and the fruition. So like teaching, I think, is like presenting the view. You have, if you're going to practice, you have to know what the view of reality is, or how you're going to practice. You need teaching of what the practice is first. And then there's the practice of the meditation and the conduct, that is the enactment of this view, and then there's the fruition, or it's like realization of the view that was taught through the practice. Yeah? So it's a nice kind of model of Buddha Dharma. There's teaching about how to practice, then there's putting it into practice, and then there's realization. So Keizan says these three, Zazen is not based on these three, but these three are contained within Zazen. And then he just said how the usual view of them. Now here's Keizan's view of them. Teaching, we've taken up teaching as the first one, or the view. Teaching is found in Zen, but it's not the usual teaching. Rather, it's a direct pointing, a single transmission of the way, speaking with the whole body or the whole essence. Such words are without sentences or phrases. Where views end and concepts are exhausted, the one word pervades the 10 directions without raising up so much as a single hair. This is the true teaching of the Buddhas and ancestors. So usually we think of teaching comes in all these words. Here it's where views end, concepts are exhausted. The one word pervades the 10 directions. One of the early Chan ancestors, Sung Mi, had liked to quote this phrase of the one word awareness is the gateway to all mysteries. But really, even that's too wordy. Such Zen words, speaking with the whole body, are without sentences or clauses or phrases. And when I heard that from Keizan, I again thought of this story I read a little bit of the other day, of this woman who had a stroke. Her name is Lauren Marks. The article is called, Ken gave me this magazine, a section on consciousness. And it's called What My Stroke Taught Me, The Surprising Quiet Nourishment of Losing My Internal Monologue. And there were some beautiful descriptions of this young woman's time in the hospital after her stroke. I read the other day, she's just very present, and other people were very concerned about her well-being. She wasn't in any physical pain, and they were like disturbed because she couldn't communicate right, and she wasn't like herself, her old self. They were disturbed, but she was not disturbed. She was really, everything was like miraculous. So, and very, very quiet, she calls it, with a capital Q, quiet. So this is a part about language, because this is what reminded me here, and Keizan talking about the teaching of Zazen doesn't come in words and phrases. So she's in her hospital room, and at some point notices this pile of books and magazines she didn't notice before. And she picked up this book. It was a novel by Agatha Christie, Mystery. Something I probably had read many years earlier, that probably her parents brought her in the hospital room. So she recognized it, I think, by like the color and the feeling of it she read as a child. The look of the book. I opened to chapter 1 and flipped slowly and evenly through the first few pages, a motion that seemed to come naturally to me. You know, she knew how to do this. She'd done that so many times before. But on the third page I stopped, because I realized I'm not actually reading the book here. Let's go back to the first page. I returned to the first page and started again, slower this time, much slower. My eyes focused and refocused in the bright sunlight, but I continued to only see the black, blocked shapes where words used to be. It's hard to even imagine this, right? Because we are so used to looking at these black shapes and effortlessly and immediately interpreting the signs as concepts, right? They're not just shapes. It's almost, when I look at the letters on the page now, you can look at these letters. Isn't it virtually impossible to look at these letters and just see them as shapes and color and not meaning, not a sign for something else? So, and she was like, I don't want to equate her post-stroke state with the Zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors exactly. It's too much trying to fit everything together, but maybe something quite similar. Because she's not at all like dull or hazy. She's completely clear and lucid and awake, more than usual in this state, she says. Everything is vivid and clear. But this meaning of these signs and symbols is not functioning in the usual way. She says, thinking about it now, I don't know how I could be so certain that it was an Agatha Christie novel. Especially since this was the very moment when she focused on these shapes that I became aware that I couldn't read anymore. With this simultaneously familiar and unfamiliar book in my hands, I first took in the actual loss of words. For my entire life, language had been at the forefront of every personal or professional achievement, and very few things had brought me as much joy and purpose as language. If I had ever been warned that I might be robbed of my ability to read, even for a limited amount of time, it would have been a devastation too cruel to bear. I kind of feel this way. I love reading. Or so I would have thought. But a day did come when I couldn't read the book in front of me, when paragraphs appeared to be nothing more than senseless jumbles, and the way I actually processed this massive loss was surprisingly mild. The knowledge of the failure was jarring, without a doubt. Like, she knew that there was something that usually happens with books that she couldn't do. It was jarring, without a doubt, but was there any misery or angst? No. My reaction was much less sharp. A vague sense of disappointment swept through me, but then my inability to use words in this way just felt like transient information. Now that the ability was gone, I could no longer think of how or why it should have any influence on my life whatsoever. It's shocking now to reflect on that moment and think about how the loss of something so crucial washed past me with such a vague wisp of emotion. But I was living so deeply in the present and in the comfort of the capital Q, quiet. I couldn't fully realize how my sense of identity had shifted. It would be several weeks before I detected how much of myself had gone missing and how hard I'd have to fight to regain it, in her case. However, the unpleasant sensations that came with holding that book drifted away as soon as I closed it, and with no effort at all, my attention settled back on the impossibly blue sky. A little bit like Sashin. Now, this is not the ideal to, you know, have a stroke and not be able to read again. But in Zazen, maybe we could look at if a word flashed through our across our mind screen, we could just see it as shape and color beautifully manifesting the teaching of all the Buddhas and ancestors.
Just this sounds very familiar to me. When the year before my father died, he had a massive stroke, and all he could say was yes. And he, no matter what question you asked him, anything, all he could say was yes with a smile, and he did not look frustrated that he couldn't say anything but yes.
Wow.
So it sounds like her, she wasn't frustrated with the fact that the words were being shaped.
How fortunate, and due to maybe the practice over a lifetime in your dad's life, that the one word he ended up with was yes. It could have been no, with a frown, right? And so I think we see this is when people do lose their minds. At least the way I would explain it, see it from a Buddhist point of view, is when nothing's left of personal control at some point in someone's mind, then what manifests is just the result of their karmic dispositions from their life up to that point. So that's a good reason to practice now, positively say yes a lot and smile a lot. So when we do lose our minds, which is another thing that I trust 100%, in addition to Buddha nature, I trust 100% that every one of us in this room will lose our minds completely. So it's coming. And our bodies. So at such a time, we will lose our bodies and minds. It could be the seventh day, or we don't know when. It could be the next moment. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. So here it's translated body, and all throughout this essay, this Chinese character appears that can be translated as body or essence or substance. And there's another character that's usually used for the physical body. So that's also used in this essay. But this translator said body, whole body here. So, but I think we could see it as our whole physical body, but maybe even our whole Dharma body, right? Which includes the physical body and includes the totality of everything, the whole essence. But here it's translated, it's a direct pointing. Actually, this one, literally, it's a single transmission of the way, but this translation says, it's a direct pointing, just expressing the way, speaking with the whole body. So that does fit nicely as the teaching without words and phrases. This is the Buddha on our altar is continuously expounding 84,000 teachings, right? without a clause or phrase, as the speaking with the whole body. So that's teaching, right? We have teaching practice and realization in Zazen. So in Zazen, although we speak of practice, it's not a practice that you can do. That is to say, the body does nothing. The mouth does not recite mantras. the mind does not think things over. The six senses are left to their own clarity and unmoved. So this is not the 16-fold practice of shravakas, which is a kind of complicated teaching of realizing the Four Noble Truths. This is what they say, shravakas realize the Four Noble Truths. But each of the four truths has these kind of four aspects of deepening realization in the Abhidharma Kosha presented like this. So maybe he says 16 just to make it even more complicated and to say it's not that. Zazen is not these 16-fold realization of the Four Noble Truths of the Shravakas. It's not the practice of understanding the 12 links of dependent arising of the Pratyeka Buddhas, and nor is it the six paramitas, the perfections within the numberless activities of bodhisattvas. Practice is not all those practices, this zazen. It's without doing at all, so it's called Buddha, or awakening. And as he said earlier, it's all those practices are not the zazen, but zazen includes all the teachings, practices, and realizations. Just rest in the self-enjoyment samadhi of all the Buddhas, wandering playfully in the four practices of joy and ease of bodhisattvas. And so this is a reference to the Lotus Sutra, chapter 14, has these peaceful and easy practices. Where the bodhisattvas in that sutra, they sing, I got a peaceful, easy feeling. And they're like, these four are listed, all these bodhisattva practices, but their four categories are like bodies, speech, mind, and vows to benefit. So these bodhisattvas wander playfully through those practices without doing anything. So that's teaching and practice. And then there's realization or verification, confirmation. Although we speak of realization in zazen, we realize without realization, or we verify without verification. This is the sovereign of samadhis, the zamai o zamai, which is the knowing of unborn, unobstructed, and spontaneously arising awareness. The supreme samadhi, which is the knowing of unborn, unobstructed, and spontaneously self-arisen awareness. It is the gate of luminosity which opens out on to the wisdom of the Tathagatas, born through the Dharma gate of repose and bliss. This goes beyond the patterns of ordinary and holy, goes beyond confusion and wisdom. This is the realization, verification, and confirmation of unsurpassed awakening as our own nature. So this is teaching, practice, and verification in zazen, according to Keizan Zenji. Not only is it so, but can you believe that we have the opportunity to practice this Dzogchen? Wow. I mean, everybody potentially, of course, has this potential to practice this opportunity, but like, we even have like, you know, cushions and seats and a schedule that says Dzogchen on it. So for us, it's like really just set up. We can do it. I mean, not do it. Any other things to bring up? Yes.
Just it reminded me of the song of Tom Hunter. All God's children got a place in the choir. Some sing low, some sing higher, some sing out loud on the telephone wire. Some just clap their hands, their paws are raising and up now.
Is this the self-enjoyment samadhi? May our intention equally extend to every being and place, everywhere we could possibly imagine and beyond, with the true merit of Buddha's way. And beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.